Welcome to another edition of the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast. I'm Matt Perrault. How are you? Thanks for joining us here on the podcast. And boy, do we have a lot of great stuff to get to you guys today. Eileen Falkenberg-Hull, Mike Herzing, and myself, we were together in California. We went to the Chevrolet 2020 gorgeous Corvette Stingray mid-engine launch. We've got a ton of coverage coming up on that big reveal, what we thought of the vehicle, what we thought about the actual show they put on here in California. It was a ton of fun to be out here. We also have Mike Herzing going out to Asheville, North Carolina, thanks to Hyundai, for a brand new vehicle that they unveiled as well. We got a couple of interviews coming up with Hyundai. We've got our automotive reviews. Myself, Eileen Falkenberg-Hull, and Mike Herzing, we've all got cars that we drove this week. So we've got so much great content. Thank you for listening. If you've not subscribed yet, please do so on where you go get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or others as well. So we are really psyched. We want to thank Chevrolet at the top here and Hyundai for bringing us out. Mike, Eileen, and myself to California, and Mike to Asheville, North Carolina. Hopefully, you guys have seen pictures. If you haven't seen pictures of the new 2020 Chevrolet Corvette, go to Let's Talk Wheels SBN on Instagram and Let's Talk Wheels on Facebook, facebook.com/Let's Talk Wheels. You will see a ton of content, pictures and videos and all sorts of cool things that we saw here in California. Let's get right to it. We all sat after we saw and got a chance to digest and look at all the information about the new 2020 Chevrolet Corvette mid-engine, the Stingray. Eileen, Mike, and myself all broke it down from our media hotel on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast.
All right, folks, Matt Perrault, Eileen Falkenberg-Hull, and Mike Herzing. We are back from the reveal, the 2020 Chevrolet Corvette Stingray. Okay, so we got a lot to digest here. We just went through a whole big, long show, I guess they'd call it, as they were wanting us to call it. But Mike, your first reaction?
It's an extravaganza. But no, it's a great vehicle. I think it's great. Some things I'm not real happy with. But they had to do something. It was time. It was long in the tooth, and they needed to make some changes. And let's hope these are the right ones. What do you think, Eileen?
I'm really impressed with the exterior, especially the front of the vehicle. Not so thrilled with the interior.
Yeah.
Looking forward to driving it, see how that engine performs, see how the interior works when you're driving it, to see if all those buttons that we saw are actually really easily used while you're behind the wheel. I'm just really looking forward to getting behind the wheel and testing out those drive dynamics.
Okay, let's start with some of the specs people are going to want to know about. And so let's talk a bit about the engine, Eileen. What are people going to see? It's the mid-engine. This is what they've been working on for a long time. A lot of the presentation tonight was on what the engine looks like, how it will perform, but give us some of the specs.
Yeah, so it's got a 6.2-liter small block V8. It's the LT2 engine from General Motors. It will produce 495 horsepower and 470 pound-feet of torque in the Stingray Edition, which is generally their base model. So we should see some higher performance models coming out in the future. No word on that right now.
In terms of speed, Mike, 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds. You buying it?
If they can do it, it'd be great. And you know, it's going to be lighter. You know, you got to think they're going to go up against the Demon or the big Hellcats and things like that, and Porsches and stuff like that. But I don't know. That's not a really 0 to 60 car. I mean, that's more of a high-speed vehicle. I'm sure that thing will probably maybe bump up close to 200, I'm sure. But like Eileen, I'm a little nervous about the interior. But, you know, all those big line of buttons, I guess once you learned them, it'd be great. But it'd take you a little while. And
yeah, let's hold that because I want to get further into that because we got to explain what that looks like. It's tough to, without seeing it, it's tough to understand what we're talking about from the interior standpoint. But let's stick with the performance of the vehicle. You know, I mean, this is going to be a high-performance vehicle. I mean, I was pretty impressed with the look. You know, I love the fact they tucked the door handles kind of underneath the way the vehicle is wrapped
very
around.
Very sleek. It's a very, very sleek-looking vehicle. You can tell it was developed in a wind tunnel. It does look like a lot of the other mid-engine cars out there. I don't think that's a bad thing. The badging at the front, you definitely see that it's a Corvette. From the back, you see some of those notes of Camaro. The spoiler on the back is very distinctive. There is a lot of Chevrolet styling there, but it does look like it was designed in a wind tunnel, which, you know, of course, that brings the question, how good is it on the road? And I was really encouraged by the fact that they did add the 2-inch lift to it for when you're going at higher speed, you can get up off the ground, which anyone who's driven a Corvette recently knows that ground clearance is a problem. So it was nice to see that. That's something that will be a much welcome addition.
Well, that was the thing that got actually the biggest ovation, Mike, was the fact that you have the ability to raise, if you're going over a speed bump, you now actually can lift the vehicle up and the vehicle will GPS mark where actually that was. So when you go back to it, you can hit on the screen, since it'll pop up, says, hey, do you want us to record this? You hit yes. So if you live in a complex, like say you live in a community that's got speed bumps,
sure,
at least your car now will be able to recognize that you got to raise up if you're going over it, if you're driving that over that speed bump every day.
Well, it's like my radar detector that I can mark whenever there's a problem and a bad spot, and then it'll remember, hey, you're getting up to this. Well, this is, you know, they want to drop them down low for aerodynamics, for performance and things like that, and hug the road, but then all of a sudden there's speed bumps,
yeah,
and things like that. So this means when you get to it, it'll raise it up and go, okay, fine, and you still have the advantage of a nice low vehicle. Because I can't tell you how many Corvette owners, or just any kind of Porsches and stuff like that, you hit a speed bump, you got to be so careful. Like where we were, you know, the studio where I go to, there's no way I could make it up there. Just
yeah,
can't.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a good deal. But I like the fact that it's mid-engine. They can move the cockpit forward, I think, about 16 inches. It's just, it's going to be a whole new game here. It's a whole new deal.
All right, before we get to the interior, price tag on this, it sounds like we're going 60K, under 60K to start with the base model.
So they're saying sub 60K, which a lot of us will say that's 59,995 plus, you know, 1095 destination handling. So there is going to be a dealer markup, though, on these. They are very hot. They are, I think, going to be as hot as the C7 Corvette is not at the moment. And I think that's why we're seeing the C7. So if you like the C7, it's probably a good time to go to your dealer and look for a great deal on one. You can get them for over $10,000 off right now from what I'm seeing. So there's some really good deals out there. But yeah, it's a big progression for the car, for the brand, for the company. It's a step in the right direction, and it is certainly more performance focused. I think a little bit more than it has been in the past too, with some of the new technology they've added.
What do you make of the C7, Mike? I mean, in terms of this vehicle, how much does this put the 2019s, you know, how much does that impact what's going to happen to the dealerships right now?
Well, I don't know, because I know the dealers are going to be, now, whenever there's a new version of anything, a new, you know, generation of something, the last generation is that loses its value. But then again, you think about it, it's the end of a run, which means they've got all the little, you know, problems fixed. They've got all this good stuff. And a lot of people want front-engine cars. There's a big brouhaha with all the Corvette enthusiasts. Some of them are going, why don't you just still build the front engine and still do the rear? So there's a lot of stuff going on.
And they did take a lot of time today during our presentation to really discuss the heritage behind the mid-engine and where that comes from. That comes from the 60s and the 70s and the racing that happened then, and really made a good case study for why they went this direction, despite some of the outcry they have had. So there is a business case. There's a history case for it. You know, under $60,000, that's because of the mid-engine and the VA engine. So there's some interesting things happening there.
Okay, so let's get to the interior now. So I think we all agree that the exterior of this vehicle is gorgeous. It's going to perform. I think we all know the people who want this car are going to love driving this car. But the interior is really hard. So I put this out on my own personal Twitter. And so I've had 50, it's been out for over about an hour now. So I got 50 retweets and about, I don't know, probably 15 different comments from people on this as to what they're looking at. The row of buttons that's on the right-hand side for the driver. Normally we see the typical, you know, 8-inch screen that's there for all your infotainment, but they've decided to put a long vertical, I don't know what you want to call that.
I would say it's almost like a horizon. So sometimes in sports cars, you have between the driver and passenger a grip handle. The Lexus LC has this. This kind of rides that same sort of pattern where it's a sloping horizontal. It goes from about where your climate controls would be on a typical car down to where your cup holders might be, closer to the seat buckle. And that has 21 different buttons on it. They're all black, and they control everything from your climate controls to your heated seats to, I believe, your some of your drive functions there. It's a strip. It's maybe an inch and a half wide. It's a typical button size. It looks like there's not much differentiation in how the buttons feel. I mean, we didn't get a chance to actually get in and test them, but from the looks of things, there's some rocker switches there. There's some just flat out buttons that light up different colors, but it's one I struggle with. I think of the average Corvette buyer being, you know, a 60-year-old male. I mean, that's who's buying it. And somebody who's maybe not as tech savvy as the rest of the younger generation. And how does that male drive with all those buttons in an everyday driving situation? Is it practical? Does it work? And the other thing I look at too is that's not an easy fix. If the customers come to them and say, we don't like it, they can't just change that in a year. That is a fundamental change to the interior that could be 3 to 4 years out to quote unquote fix it if they need to. It's a very big commitment from Chevrolet on that design, and I think it was universally thumbs down on it today for this everybody there and most of the internet, from what I could tell.
Yeah, just people on my Twitter, the comments are pretty funny about how many buttons there are, and people are making a joke of like, is that the popcorn button? Is that the Instagram like button? Like, what? How many different buttons do you need when you're driving a performance vehicle? I don't get it.
I don't either. But, and you know, you're right. They need something, but they were honest to say, hey, we still have a volume button for the audio system. Come on, they got to do something. And it's going to take a lot of time for old farts like me to get used to that stuff.
Well, and it's not just that. I mean, it's 21 buttons, and most of them look like they feel similar. Most of them, they look similar. And granted, you don't need to be doing all that. But when I drive my personal car, or I drive another car, to know right where those buttons are and not to have to fiddle. And you know, you look even at the Porsches. You see the Porsches that have the buttons down by the shifter, and they're surrounding the shifter, and you still have to kind of have an idea of where you're going with
but
your hand.
It's going to distract you no matter what.
Oh, absolutely. This is a different form of distracted driving, and it's something that I would be very interested to see the data of the testing on it, to see what people actually thought of it in their test groups, because you know they go through all these test groups and everything before they launch it, and to really see what people thought and how Chevy actually interpreted that feedback, we'll never see that, but I'd be very interested to.
Eileen, you made a great point about the fact that the buttons do not seem, and again, we did not sit in the vehicle yet, but it doesn't seem like there's a gigantic differentiation between the two, all the functions. So like, if you're driving and you're used to looking and you're looking for something on, you're actually having to turn your head and look at the 21 buttons as you scroll down.
And it's not in the most natural position either. It's much closer to the passenger. It looks to be further away. Now, I'm someone who, when the seek knob is on the far side of the infotainment system, sometimes I have a hard time reaching it. Well, this panel starts about where that button is. So am I going to have to, theoretically, because it's a bucket seat, look up as being 5'6", to see over the hump to see where that is? It does look quite raised off the center console. And, you know, that's just, like I said, another form of distracted driving.
And it's sort of weird because it separates you, not that you want to be close to the passenger, right? But there's like a barrier between you and the passenger.
It's very Me Too friendly in that respect. I don't think my husband would like it. I mean, he wouldn't be able to drive with his hand on my knee, which is something he does. And I don't think that's uncommon in relationships. But it does not lead to any romance in the car. This is very much performance and performance on the road only.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to, holding hands will be awkward. I have to go over the top of the thing it's a strange design.
It's a strange design, but, you know, let's just give them a break. Let's see how it works. It's all conjecture here.
Okay,
I don't like it that much, but
well, let me ask you this
then.
Let's
see how it is.
How do you feel about the fact that there is not a manual stick option here? There is no manual transmission. It's manual, but there's nothing. You're not going to have a stick shift in this vehicle.
They've got a new design for the transaxle. It's actually got a transaxle now, and that's going to give a lot better response to everything else. And I don't know if it would be slower to go with a stick shift. And also, they've got a lot of power, and the way that thing is designed, you're better off. But the best thing about it, now that it's mid-engine, they can stiffen up the chassis, they can stiffen up the steering. The steering will be better response. The weight distribution will be really good, probably close to 50-50. It's going to handle great. It's going to be quieter. It'll be stiffer. It's going to be great. A lot of aluminum things.
Yeah, the media is rolling back in here. The media's obviously had a couple of beverages, so they're being a little bit loud as they're rolling in. So I apologize for the background noise. People in the media probably should know a little better about the fact that people are recording things, but that's beyond the point. So we're sitting in our media hotel here because it was absolute chaos. I mean, Eileen, I guess the thing that I'll take away from this is the fact that it appeared that all the people who had come to see it came away with smiles on their faces, which is basically what Corvette wanted to have, or Chevrolet wanted to happen tonight, right?
Right. The exterior of the vehicle very much fed what the enthusiasts wanted and what they expected, I think. And Chevrolet did a very good job with that. The question is, will they turn new buyers onto the Corvette? That's the Corvette's biggest obstacle right now in the marketplace. And does this do that? It could. It might. It's very well worth a shot for them.
What about price? Does that knock the barrier down or create a bigger one?
Well, I think it's different. It's a lot cheaper. So I look at this as being, do I want the Lexus LC or do I want the new Corvette? Do I want a Porsche or do I want the new Corvette? It's cheaper, but is it going to be cheaper in the variant I wanted in? Is this base model good enough for me? Because we all know the price is going to get very, very expensive. You're going to keep building. You're probably going to be able to build it up to near $100,000. And then you're competing with those Porsches and that. And it has to overcome that hump of not just price, but audience. This car has to find a new audience other than who Chevrolet has been selling the Corvette to for the last 10, 15 years. And that is its biggest struggle. And that depends on marketing. That depends on dealerships. That depends on a lot. But I think that the new face of the Corvette is enough to get people to take a second glance at a dealership, to look at a commercial and go, ooh, that's sexy, to make them want to find out more. And hopefully that delivers for Chevrolet.
Do you agree?
Yeah, I agree. But also, don't forget, you just mentioned about Porsches and things like that. This puts them right there with them. At least the customer that would gonna buy a Porsche will now look at a Corvette.
Well, that's all theoretical too, right? Because we haven't driven it. So I don't know if the steering is as pointed. There's a lot there. And we also know necessarily that the Mercedes and Porsche customer and the Audi customer might not be the right Corvette customer.
Right.
But does it put it there with the GT500 from Ford, the new GT500? Does it put it there with all of those other kind of more competition coupes that we see coming out of the U.S. manufacturers? And is it enough to pull business away from Ford? And from this,
I think it might.
It very well might. But how small is that segment? Is that profitable? And we know that Mary Barra and the rest of the team at GM is very much about profit. And I feel like this is almost a last gasp to try and get it an audience to see kind of what happens with it.
I love it. I think it's going to be great. And you're right. Somebody that wants a mid-engine exotic Porsche, but maybe they'll say, you know, God, I wish the American Car Company would build something like that. Well, guess what? They just did. And the NSX and things like that. I mean, I'm looking at this, and you would normally that there were it's like apples and oranges, but now it's pretty close.
Well,
so you got to think about that.
The NSX is also twice the price,
right?
And it's more hand built and things like that. So there's a lot different of a quality.
I'm just talking
there.
About the mid engine, the design.
Right.
You know,
right.
Now I'm talking
right.
about you get into your Audi R8 or something like that. It kind of looks you're at least. Some kind of it's closer, you know what I mean?
And the back
going to be a lot cheaper too.
The back reminds me of an R8 because you can look straight into the engine, much like you could come with the Audi R8.
Well, that and we've got the new Toyota Supra, right? So that's Toyota's performance coupe. It's a smaller vehicle, and how does this rate for that? They're about the same price. I mean, Supra tops out where this Corvette Stingray starts, and we're seeing that kind of how will that play out? Those are two different customers, but maybe that's kind of where we are for the differences between the models. The car market is very interesting right now. It's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out in the marketplace.
All right, Mike, a wrap on what you think of this. I mean, what's your takeaway, your final takeaway of the new 2020 mid-engine Chevrolet Corvette?
It's a nice step. I knew they had to do something, and they did pretty good. They took a nice shot, and it's going to be exciting to see the changes. And also, don't forget, this is the first one. Wait till the next, they do a refresh in about 2 years. They'll solve all the little problems. But I tell you what, this is pretty cool. Hmm. This is a cool car, and the Corvette owners that I talked to and I saw tonight were all smiles. So that'd be great
for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big, bold step for Chevrolet. It's what needed to be done to solidify the Corvette as something still worth making and still investing money in. And I think it was well received. I'm looking forward to seeing how it does. And I'm really looking forward to seeing it on dealer lots because it's a good-looking car.
I think it looks tremendous. I have a massive concern with the interior, and I'm somebody that I actually am pretty... Look, I'm 42 years old, so I'm not young, but I feel like I'm at least on the younger side here in terms of what I look for in the infotainment side of things with vehicles. I'm concerned about the cockpit. I'm concerned about what's going on when I'm driving the vehicle. And for that price point, I shouldn't be confused. It should be very quick and streamlined. So I am a little bit concerned about that. But in terms of the look of the vehicle and what it does performance-wise without driving it, just hearing about the engine and what it could perform like, yeah, I think it's going to put on, at least on the list of if you're looking at this type of vehicle to go in and potentially buy it.
We didn't mention how good it sounds too.
True.
It has a great exhaust note, and hearing those three models roaring in this afternoon to the hangar, man, it looked good and it sounded so good.
Yeah. American muscle, buddy. It's hard to beat it right here. This is exactly what they needed, and it's kind of an exotic American muscle car for the first time.
All right, Mike, tell us what's happening. You came all the way from Asheville, North Carolina, so we're going to air one of your two interviews here. Tell us what it was like to go over to check out the new Hyundai. You're in Asheville and having some fun over in the Carolinas.
Well, we talked Palisades a couple weeks ago with Eileen when she saw it up in Idaho, but I got a chance to drive it. It's very nice. I talked to that, but the exciting part to me, because I'm an engine nerd, they talked about their new CVVD engine, which is constantly the variable lift and duration for the camshaft. So, and it's a mechanical way of doing it. That's going to help extend the life of the internal combustion engine. It's pretty exciting. You know, Mazda's got some great news. Infiniti had their variable compression engine last year. All these things mean that we're going to have gasoline engine cars for a few more years, and they're better fuel economy. It's more power. This is a cool deal, guys. So listen, I have an engineer that's going to talk about that, and we're going to do it in kind of simple terms, but it's really cool.
All right, that's a wrap for us here in beautiful California. We got Mike with his recapping of what happened with Hyundai, and we have other stuff to come. Stick around here on the podcast.
Hey, guys, it's Mike Herzing from Let's Talk Wheels, and we're in Asheville, North Carolina, driving the new Hyundai Palisades. I'm really impressed with it. I'm impressed. I've also grabbed the big cheese, the top guy here from product planning and PR and everything else. Brandon's been everything. Brandon Ramirez, you've been on the show before, and we love to have you again. This is great. Welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Yeah, I'm glad to talk to you, Mike.
Yeah, we've been doing a great time. You and I have talked together 6, 8, 10, 12 times, and I'm here for the Palisades, and Eileen Falkenberg-Hull, who's also on the show, we were talking about it last week. She saw it in Idaho, but I'm here in North Carolina. Loved it. It's been a really great deal. So let's talk about the Palisades, all right? And how big is this? This thing is pretty big. What are your competitors?
Our key competitors are Honda Pilot, Toyota Highlander. But one of the things we really wanted to do with this vehicle is make it roomy. So compared to the Santa Fe XL, this is 3 inches larger.
Yeah. Yeah, an XL, that was a pretty good seller. But this thing seems, I know it's the cousin of the Telluride, but it seems like it's the more sophisticated cousin. And I hate to say that, but it just seems that way.
And that's exactly it. So when you compare the two, you'll find that the Palisade is much more premium.
Yeah.
Also has key features that it doesn't have. For example, 12-inch TFT screen or gauges.
Right.
Also,
We're going to talk about those gauges. Let's move on. This is obviously the top of the Hyundai food chain right now when it comes to SUV, CUV things, right? Wouldn't you agree?
Exactly. This is our flagship vehicle, but it has a great starting price at $31,550.
Yeah, that is. I know you can load it up the way you want, but for somebody on a budget, it's still a really good value. And, you know, it seems like I've been talking to you guys from Hyundai forever, and you especially, and it seems like you've never lost side of that.
Yeah, a value is very important, and we still continue to offer that 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty.
Yeah, that's a big deal, and it really is. Now, you've got a kind of a distinctive front-end design. I mean, with the new daylight running lights, these things are hot-looking, and I mean, it looks... You know, I thought the Ford Power Stroke with its cool little lights and stuff on the side, there was that. This seems pretty cool. I mean, how you guys thought of that stuff? I mean, would you like, okay, we're going to build smoking hot looking car with this. Is that what you thought?
Yeah, exactly. We wanted to have a bold front end. And when you see the grill, yeah, it's big, prominent. And when you're driving down the road, people will say, wow, what is that? Also, we have these LED daytime running lights that the designers were inspired by crocodile eyes.
That's what it is. Yeah, crocodile eyes. And they look it, don't they?
Yeah. So, for example, let's say a crocodile's poking its eyes outside the water.
Right.
That's it, the design look that they were trying to incorporate.
Yeah, but it's got a front end side, very extinctive. But the interior, okay, this thing is, you know, your interior design theme was serenity. And it really is. It's kind of calming. It's kind of nice. It's kind of flows. And it's not choppy at all, but it all kind of matches. It meshes together.
Yeah, exactly. And also in the interior, it looks expansive. It looks very roomy as well. But everything's pleasant to the eyes, very premium feeling as well.
Yeah, and this thing, when you look at things from the side, it has this big, and I'm looking at it like, God, it looks like a size of a Tahoe, you know, and it's very distinctive and very kind of, you know, strong. And this is the big Hyundai.
Yes. Yeah. One of the things we did on the concept is we told the designers that we wanted a big glass area to improve visibility, but it also makes the vehicle look even larger.
Yeah, airy. And then on the one we had the dual sunroofs. So, I mean, it was like that. I know my radio partner, Matt Peralta, his daughter loves the big sunroofs, but this thing was great. And it's so quiet. And the interior design, though, is comfortable in it, but it kind of just calms you down. You have a rough day. You get in the car and just kind of, in the Harman Kardon sound system. Oh, my gosh. How many watts is that?
630 watts with 12 speakers.
Yeah, but then but it's also added to it because the car's so quiet and the interior's so quiet. And I guess it's aerodynamic. So you even have that wraparound rear glass.
you know, the quarter glass, and it just wraps all around. This thing is really, folks, you're going to see this thing and go, wow. I hate to say it's a Hyundai, but wow, it's a Hyundai. It's question mark, and it's like, wow. I mean, people are still getting over the fact that you guys have made all these, you know, J.D. Power and all these different awards for quality and initial quality and things like that. And now you're getting a lot of loyalty stuff. All right, let's keep going. This vehicle's got a really wide track. Mm-hmm. This is not a narrow – this is a wide, big thing. It looks like a domestic car. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a SUV. And I know that's what you're looking for. Now, you also talk about ride quality, because I noticed it was really good, and you guys have now added a bunch of high-strength steel. Now, how does a stronger chassis like that make it ride better?
So what we did is on the body, we improved the body rigidity. And what that does is it gives the engineers the flexibility to dial in more ride quality when you're driving the vehicle. This has a premium interior. This has a premium look, and we also wanted to offer a premium ride feeling as well.
Well, you know, you've done that, because you've got all kinds of good stuff happening on this thing. You've got 291 horsepower, 262 pound-feet of torque, and also you've got an 8-speed transmission. Thank you for not putting a CVT transmission in it. Thank you, Lord. But you've also got all-wheel drive, and it's got this special torque vectoring, and I know it moves the power from the front to back as it needs it, or it hits the brakes a little bit if you've got a slipping wheel and things like that. But on this all-wheel drive, that's kind of like the new deal. There's not a big penalty nowadays of fuel economy or ride anymore. So I think this is going to be. Would you think this? What a percentage of sales are going to be all-wheel drive versions?
We're thinking it's going to be 50% of sales will be all-wheel drive. And when this all-wheel drive is sophisticated, so as you learned today, we drove at the Biltmore Estates off-roading,
right?
And it was totally capable.
We were nasty mud, and we're sitting there doing just fine. I'm sitting there like, wow, we're on the Land Rover off-road course, and it did just fine. So you know, within reason, it's great. Now you've also got this H-track vectoring control, and it checks it 100 times per second. So 100 times per second, it finds out what wheel's slipping, and it hits the brakes for you. It adds the brake. It does all this by itself, right?
Yeah, it's a very sophisticated system. Also, our H-track system has different drive modes. So, mm-hmm. for example, we have a smart mode that understands how you drive, and so it can send 100% of the driving force to the front wheels, or send up to 50% to the rear wheels, just depending on how you drive.
Yeah, you know, that's cool. Of course, if it gets in and says, no, how I drive, it'll have a big alarm go off on the dash. No, I'm just kidding. Now, when you get a vehicle this big, and you're going to have a family stuff, you may have to tow a trailer occasionally. You guys have added some towing capability, haven't you?
Exactly. So we have 5,000 pounds of towing towing capability. And so that's great. You can tow two jet skis if you like. It's standard.
Or a small camper?
Exactly. It's standard. And so there's no optional package in order to get that 5,000 pounds.
Well, what about the rear suspension? Obviously, you're going to put a trailer on there. You're going to load a bunch of stuff in it. You may have the mother-in-law with you or something, so the back end will sag down. You guys have a leveling system?
Yes, and it's a mechanical system that works with the shock absorbers, but what it does is it maintains the height, so that way it doesn't drag, as you mentioned.
And it doesn't shine, your headlights don't shine in people's eyes and things like that?
Exactly.
Right. Now, this has got more interior space than the XL. It doesn't seem like it's all that much bigger, but your interior seems so, I hate to say airy, but it really is. It seems like very open. Mm-hmm. Is that something you obviously aimed for?
Yeah, and what we did is we made it wider as well. And so by making it wider, we're able to, let's say for the version that has captain's chairs, people can walk through the center aisle much more comfortably and have more room.
Well, that's my next question was, you make it with eight passenger seating or seven. You know, obviously, if you decide a bench seat on the second row or captain's chairs. Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to be the take rate of the captain's chairs, which I think are dramatically better?
So historically, when we had it on our previous model, we had majority of sales, maybe 80%, be the the captain's chairs versions.
Really?
And we think that it's going to be a high percentage as well. However, for the eight passenger with the second row bench seat,
right,
we have this one touch that automatically slides forward for easy access to the third row seat. Yeah. Now, we evaluate different competitive models, and it's a chore and very difficult to understand how to fold the seat forward.
No kidding.
This, a child can just press a button.
One button, and it all folds forward. Now, also, if we need to put some more into it, the seats fold down, right?
Exactly. So from the cargo area, you can just press a button to fold down the second row, and from the cargo area, you can also press a button to fold down the third row seat, and we have a power third row.
Oh, well, that's even better. Now, also, I noticed that even though the third row seat would be up, there's still a lot of room. I can put luggage back there after that.
Exactly. And that was the intention with our concept. We know that these midsize SUVs, they fit a third row, but usually there's not enough room behind the third row seat.
Yeah.
So that was a primary focus for us. And so what we did is we
got a train here going past us. I like
that. Exactly. We provided that focus. And so we even have more than the Highlander and the Pilot.
Well, that's even better. I also noticed that this vehicle is, it's just got a lot of cargo space, but also going back to the gauges, you have these TFT, which is, everybody says they're configurable. They're not just your typical gauges that are there. You can move these things around and do all kind of changes. And then you have, every time you hit the turn signal, the camera on the right side will, if you turn a right turn signal, the right side goes on, which is other companies have, but you can turn on the left turn signal and the left side comes on, and not many people have that.
Yeah.
What do you guys talk about that for a second?
Yeah, we're very excited about that 12-inch gauge cluster. And let's say you change from different modes, let's say from Eco, it'll be in green mode, and all the fonts and the green surrounding will come on Eco. For Sport, there's an explosion on the screen that kind of, and it has that look, but it transformed to a red gauges with a different sporty font. But it really looks cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, it really looks cool. But also, it has that blind spot monitor. So if you turn your left-hand signal,
and it's not just a beeper, folks.
Exactly.
This is an actual picture of what's next to you comes up on on where the gauges were.
Exactly. So it's going to be on the left side or the right side. There are some competitors that just offer on the right side, but we offer both because we think it's important. But we still have the blind spot detection.
Right. To it still alert. Beeps.
It still beeps. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that some companies will put it in the center screen, but this one is right there in the front where you don't have to really take your eyes off the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about that. Now, you've also got a lot of convenient features, and you've got Apple CarPlay and Android Auto and this new big screen that has all kinds of stuff. Now, you have something called BlueLink.
Mm-hmm.
Tell the folks what in the heck BlueLink is.
So BlueLink is our telematic system, but it's kind of like OnStar in the sense where...
but it's blue.
Yes, exactly. With BlueLink, it has safety features like automatic collision notification. So if you get in an accident, it'll automatically alert emergency services. It has convenience features like remote start, but it also has remote climate control. So in the South, let's say Houston, it's so hot, but from your phone, you can select
the temperature.
The temperature and then remote start your vehicle as well.
And that's even better. You know, there's so many neat things they do. I mean, you don't see a lot of companies. Other domestic car companies will have all the remote start on the key fob, and that's really cool. Don't get me wrong. But everybody else doesn't do it. Now, you guys came back with this app, and I really like it, but there's so many convenience features that you guys have. It seems like also, going back real quick on the all-wheel drive system, you have all the different dials that you can set in what you want, right? Comfort and snow and mud and all that kind of stuff. How popular is that going to be?
We think it's going to be very popular because some maybe want to maximize fuel efficiency, and so they're going to put it in Eco. For those that want... they don't want to change anything, they'll put it in Smart, and that what Smart does is it understands how you drive and applies appropriate torque to the front and rear wheels. And some people like sport, the sporty feeling, and they'll put it in that.
Oh,
if they want maximum traction, we have a snow mode where you can put that in.
Oh, that's even better. Now, you guys are all about safety stuff. Now, going back before we talk to the safety stuff, the trim levels.
Mm-hmm.
What trim levels do you have?
So our 31550 starting price.
Now that's sticker, folks.
That's sticker, yes, exactly. And that's our SE model. And then we also have a SEL trim, which is our mid trim.
Yeah.
And then we have our limited, which is our luxury trim. There's no options on that, and that's fully loaded.
I don't think
loaded.
You need options.
No, exactly.
Looking at the list of stuff, folks, I don't know there's a whole lot you could add.
Exactly. And that was the intention. In our research, we found that people wanted just the fully loaded. They don't want additional options.
Yeah, they want to have the dealer add stuff and everything else. So that now when it gets up, you can load this thing up into the high 40s, right?
Yeah. So the limited with all-wheel drive is 46,400.
Yeah, that's really not – that's cheaper than a lot of your competitors. And it's all – like I said, once again, it's talking about value. Which one do you think is going to sell the most, the limited or
We think it's going to be the SEL, the mid-trim, right. But historically it has been limited. But what we did is we offered key features that are optional on the SEL.
Yeah, okay. Now, you guys still have price advantage over everybody else. And it's I want to talk about couple of safety features. You have the lane divergence. You have mm-hmm. the automatic cruise control. You have all that kind of stuff. We love it. Automatic braking, mm-hmm. pedestrian detection, and all that kind of stuff. But my favorite thing, guys, and y'all need to get pats on the back. You can reach over and everything else you want. But I love the rear occupant alert because there's so many kids that passed away. I think 49 last year, and there's just every day because of heat stroke, idiot people leaving their kids in their cars. I don't know. What can I say? Besides the dogs and besides the groceries and everything else, what do you guys have solved that problem. Tell us how.
Yeah. So what we do is we have this rear occupant alert. And what it does is it's different than any system in the marketplace. What it does is on the headliner, there's a ultrasonic sensors. Okay. And let's say you leave your dog inside the vehicle. You walk off to your house. What it'll do is the ultrasonic sensors will sense movement inside the cabin mm-hmm. and automatically honk the horn, alerting you that you left something in the vehicle.
Yeah, it goes crazy.
Exactly. And also with BlueLink that right. we talked about earlier, it sends you an alert as a text message saying you left something in the vehicle.
I think you can get a text message, even an email or something. All this stuff. All about, hey, idiot, you left something in the car.
Exactly. And one of the great things about that is when we developed the initial concept, mm-hmm. this rear occupant alert was a U.S. Idea that yeah. they incorporated worldwide. But that was exactly what we did it because of the exact reasons that you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, but I could imagine being a parent and having that happen. Mm-hmm. It'll bring tears to your eyes. But you guys have done such a good job on this. How are the dealers how they received this thing?
So they're very excited about it. You know, every single vehicle it just arrived in June, and they've sold every single one of them, and they're trickling out to all the dealerships now.
Their complaint now is, "Give me more."
Exactly, okay. That's what it is.
Hey, that's kind of cool. Now, where is this built?
This is built in Ulsan, Korea.
At some point, they'll probably bring it here, though, won't they? Once you figure out somehow a way to produce it here.
We'll see. We'll see about that. But right now, it's Ulsan, Korea.
All right, folks. This is Brandon Ramirez from Hyundai. He's the head cheese. He knows everything. If you have any questions, you can email me, info@letstalkwheels. I'll give you any more questions about this. Be sure to check out the Hyundai website. What is it, HyundaiUSA.com?
Yes, exactly.
And if you want to see something about the new engine that we were talking about, go to Hyundai News. That has a neat video about their new CVVD engine, which I'm really excited about. We talked to John Simmons about that earlier. But guys, Brandon, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Mike.
And we've got John Simmons from Hyundai Product Planning. He's going to tell us a little bit about this new engine, how cool it is, and why it's so cool. Hey, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels, John.
Thank you.
Tell us about the new engine. Kind of what's it called, first of all?
It's called CVVD, continuously variable valve duration.
Okay, that's how long the valve stays open.
That's correct.
And I know we've had cam timing differences. You know, intake cam timing is off, you know, changes, and exhaust cam timing changes, and all that gives us more and more power. And it's all these generations. Now, this is the third generation, so it actually does all the other stuff along with they change the duration of the valve. Now, what is that going to do for the engine? What is that? Is it going to help performance? Is it help fuel economy, or is it all of it?
Yeah, it actually helps both power, fuel economy, and emissions, especially.
Uh-huh.
It is able to change the duration of the intake valve so that it can stay open longer. And when the engine is not under load, it can stay open longer, which causes less resistance to the piston as it comes up in the compression stroke, and therefore makes the engine more efficient at low loads.
Yeah, especially if that cylinder isn't being used right then, it's not a firing, it will actually ease off a little bit, make the engine a little bit freer. Now, this is something Hyundai's been working around. You guys... your engines are great. I mean, the 2-liter is just indestructible. You guys have had such luck with this, but you seem to keep evolving this technology, and you still have a lot of faith in the internal combustion engine. You guys, like me, are not ready to have everything electric, right? And that's kind of cool.
Absolutely. I think you can see in the way we have a diverse portfolio of powertrains, but also like the fact that this technology is specifically best used for small displacement turbo engines. That's very precise, but for Europe and some needs in the U.S., that can be very efficient.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things with these engines. People, some of the manufacturers seem like have like given up on them, and they're all like Volvo and Volkswagen and all those kind of things. They seem to want to just move on to electric, but everybody else seems to hang on to this because they're so reliable, and they're so we don't have to worry about a I don't have to worry about a charging station. On the where I live, it's if I want to drive from Houston to Dallas, it's 260 miles. There's nothing I can go in. If I was an electric car, once I got there, I'd be done. I'd have to wait for it to charge for several hours. And you may not be able to work with that. So for some people, the internal combustion engine is still a real viable deal. And you guys are making even more. I mean, everybody's done something. You know, Mazda has a new engine. Infiniti's made some changes. And between all you guys, it seems to really, I mean, us gearheads and motorheads are really like patting you on the back. This is really great.
Thanks a lot for that. You know, there's a lot of technology that you can put together, too. So this, the fact that it's on a turbo, you know, if we get to the point where we add the hybrid technology to that, regain all that energy on coast down, that's just another way to extend the combustion engine.
Well, you know, you're right. Now, when this thing, what are you guys, I mean, a lot of companies are going to all these CVT transmissions, and a lot of it has to do with the engine and design, and they have to do that because of the way the engine's designed. And, mm-hmm. But is this one going to come with a CVT or a regular an 8-speed like the Palisades we're driving now? Or what do you guys have any idea?
I think we've announced that it is going to be first used in the Sonata in the home market of Korea. We may be getting that engine later in the U.S. Right now, I believe the application would be an AT, 8AT. However, of course,
it
could,
yeah,
it could be a DCT as well, which dual clutch transmission.
Right.
But it's unclear for the U.S. which transmission it would be.
Well, you know, you guys have done so well. You know, we're in the engines here in the U.S., where do you build your engines here?
We have an engine plant in Alabama.
In Montgomery. Yeah. Where they love you guys. I mean, you go in, folks, if you go in anywhere in Alabama and you mention Hyundai, everybody smiles because Hyundai's been so good for that state. And they love you guys, and good reason. But you build most of your engines for the U.S. market right there in Alabama, don't you?
That's correct, and we intend to continue doing that as that factor becomes more important in our future.
I wonder if this technology, obviously you can make it onto a V6, and you can do things like that. But this is going to be a 2-liter four-cylinder, or what's it going to be?
1.6.
1.6. I mean, it's funny. The
turbo,
smaller
yeah.
the engines get, and they still put out just as much horsepower.
It's great.
I mean,
and the torque curves on turbos are great. Its drivability is wonderful, and so it should be quite an engine.
You know, it really will. I mean, these guys have done so well. I mean, and your product. We were just driving the Palisades. That thing's that little V6 runs great. That 8-speed is great. It has more power and fuel economy. Fuel economy has been great. I mean, have you guys? I mean, how important is that to y'all?
I think, you know, within the segment, fuel economy is certainly important. But with the particularly with the Palisade, we balance the power needs for an 8-passenger vehicle that can tow with the efficiency as well. So it actually can do both, and it has a continuously variable valve train technologies as well.
Well, how long has Hyundai been working on this? Several years, obviously.
I think continuously. If you look back at the 2006, 2010 to now announcements, it's clear that they're spending a lot on R&D.
Yeah, so the 2006 is when they decided where they had variable cam timing on, what is it, the
intake valve.
And then in 2010 was both
that's correct.
Both camshafts, and now they've done this. So it's got both of that and this.
Yes.
Wow, it's just, and it's, folks, if you go on any of the Hyundai websites, you can even go to Hyundai News if you wanted to, but you can look at a neat video on how this thing works. And it's really interesting, and I think it's going to be a wave of the future. And I want to thank you guys for helping us, that the folks that like internal combustion engines. And I know we may end up with some powertrains that are hybrids and things like that, because Hyundai's working on hybrids now, aren't they?
Absolutely. That's a big part of our future. There's a path towards electrification, but we believe there's a long path ahead for the internal combustion engine as well.
Well, some of this electrification, in my opinion, folks, is that maybe we might be rushing this a little bit, just like autonomous driving. It's not really as cool as everybody thinks it is. And I think this electrification is great until you got to charge the battery. I've had an electric car the other day, and I was looking around. There wasn't any charging stations near me except for 8 or 9 miles away. And then I have to go there and sit there for several hours. So I can plug it in at home, but it's going to be 12 hours. So, right. You know, the farther you want to go on this electrical stuff, the longer it's going to take to charge the battery.
Yeah, that's why I think the, you know, electrification in the hybrid area is it's basically just an extension of the internal combustion engine. It's making it more efficient.
You know, you're right. And I think it's every time you slow down, you're going to regenerate power and do this kind of stuff. And you can run all the different accessories off of this. And I think it's going to be a lot better. Folks, this is Mike Herzing, Let's Talk Wheels. We're talking to John Simmons from Hyundai Product Planning. And Hyundai, you guys have been rocking lately. I mean, you've won all these quality awards and things like that. And this R&D that you're doing, this is a big deal. Do you have any R&D places here in the U.S.?
Yes, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, we have our technical facility as well. Well,
people in Michigan know about cars, that's for darn sure. And so you guys are always working with that. You've worked with a lot of partners before. You guys are partners with Kia, and a lot of your stuff will end up in the Kia. And I know the Telluride has been a great vehicle, and it's won some awards, including the Texas Motor Press Association SUV of the Year. But this Palisades is kind of like the Telluride, but a little bit nicer everywhere. And I'm really happy for it. We're going to talk to Brandon Ramirez about that. And I tell you what, I'm really happy for the Palisades. I think it's been a great vehicle, and it's just hit the dealers. And I know what are people saying about it? You have any ideas?
I mean, there's a lot of excitement in the Hyundai family, but everyone that sees the vehicle immediately has some sort of interest in it. And
like, is that a Hyundai?
There's that a Hyundai, or just I want one, or and intern inside the company as well, and the dealers are super excited for it. We can't wait to get a lot of them out there, and we think it's great for those buyers that have, you know, needs for hauling more people.
All right, hopefully you guys have enjoyed our conversations about the new 2020 Chevrolet Corvette Stingray, the mid-engine, and also Mike's trip to Asheville, North Carolina for the Hyundai Palisades. We've got some automotive reviews and some other fun things to get to before we wrap up here on the podcast. Mike's going to get his review. Eileen Falkenberg-Hull will do hers in a second, but let me tell you about what I was driving first and foremost. By the way, Matt Perrault back with you here on the podcast for the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. I was driving a 2019 Toyota Highlander. This is the PLT version, V6, all-wheel drive, and this thing's a very impressive vehicle. It was funny because when I got the car dropped off, somebody saw it and they asked me about it, and we're talking a bit about it, and there was kind of this person wasn't really that high on the Highlander and really didn't think it was that great of a vehicle at the price, which this one was $47,000 fully loaded. I actually think he was totally wrong. I really, really liked this vehicle. Let's start with the engine. V6, 24-valve, high potent engine, lot of power. 295 horsepower, 5,000 pounds of tow capacity. This thing can really tow and really, really move. I didn't do any off-roading. I didn't do any towing. But you can tell this thing is a beast. When you need the power, when you need this vehicle to give you some extra push, this is a thing that you want to have. 3.5-liter engine. Really, really liked it a lot in terms of the way that it felt, how it felt on the road, how smooth it felt, the power that you felt when you were driving on the highway or in side streets. Really liked it a lot. This vehicle is very, very safe. You feel like you are driving something that if you ever got into an accident, you would be able to walk away from it pretty easily. The Toyota Safety Sense was really nice. That's a pre-collision system with pedestrian detection, lane departure alert with steering assist, auto high beams, and dynamic radar cruise control. Really nice. 8 airbags in this vehicle. The exterior, nice headlights. Looked really, really nice. 19-inch dark chromatic wheels were gorgeous. Panoramic moonroof with sunshade. It's massive. And I mean massive. One of the biggest sunroofs I've ever seen. Absolutely, completely loved it. I love the fact that you can have that sunshade there if you want. You roll it in, you roll it out. Really, really nice. The leather, very plush. Heated steering wheel, which is nice if you're in colder temperatures. It had your cooled seats, which is massive in Las Vegas. It gets really hot, in particular in the summertime, like right now. You need the cooled seats. It had the cooling seats. The front parking sonar, which is really nice, give you that little front camera to show you if you're going to park you know, it's a big vehicle. You got to see where you are here. So the interior, this thing seats seven. It's got ventilated front seats, like I mentioned. It's got heated seats as well. 12-way power memory driving seat with a lumbar support on the in the driver's side, which I liked a lot. You know, this is an infotainment center that is okay. I'll give Toyota some credit here. Okay, 4 USB charge points right up front. Huge. Okay, it's a big step up. You know, this didn't have Apple CarPlay. It didn't have Android Auto, which is something I look for. But I love the fact you got 4 USB ports right up front, which is a big, big upgrade. You got a USB media port, which is great. You're hooking up your phone to be able to use your phone's whatever, Spotify, whatever you're using to stream stuff. Your touchscreen with backup camera, 8-inch, really big, really easy. The Entune premium JBL audio with integrated navigation is really nice as well. I really liked just the look of it, the feel of it. Very easy to use, very simple to use. I really did like this vehicle. You got seating for 8 with the second row in the back. You want to pop the row up, you can throw it. It's not huge back there in the third row, but it's there if you need it, which is really, really nice. You've got your touch liftgate, which is really, really nice to have, and just a ton of cargo space. It's a big vehicle. You got a big family, you're towing a boat, you're towing something around, you're pulling a trailer, whatever it might be. You know what the Tidelander can do. I'm a fan of it. I really found it nice, convenient, smooth, comfortable. Again, it's not a high performance SUV, but I liked it a lot. It was really nice. And in terms of the price, not bad. Look, this is not a great fuel economy vehicle, but you're not buying this thing for the fuel economy. But 21 miles per gallon. That's pretty good for an engine this size in a vehicle this size. But, you know, 5-star safety rating, frontal crash. You got 4 stars on the driver, 5 stars on the passenger, side crash, 5 stars on both, you know, 4-star rollover. I mean, this is a very, very safe vehicle. If you're looking for a vehicle, you got a big family, you're doing a lot of towing, this is definitely a vehicle you've got to check it out. The Highlander, I had the Limited, the PLT version with the V6, all-wheel drive. The 2019 Highlander from Toyota was a lot of fun to drive, and I really do. If you're in this class, you know, of a larger SUV for your big family, I definitely think take a look at this vehicle. You know, $48,000, $47,000 in the range, under $50,000, it's pretty good. All right, Mike, what were you driving this week?
Thanks, Matt. This week I was driving, and I was a lucky guy this week, the 2019 Maserati GT convertible MC version. That's the higher trim level. And this is an upgrade from the standard GT, which is a mere $150,000. The upgraded GT MC has a base price of $164,000, but mine had the nicer interior with its velour and things like that, if it can be one, because this is the nicest interior. And it had the carbon fiber interior and exterior package. For example, the hood alone, just the hood, was an extra $10,500. So it came in at a bargain at $193,492. So nice car. I don't know how to put this thing. It's like having a Ferrari. It's not the most exotic. This car is actually pretty simple. You know, it's a naturally aspirated V8. It's got a Ferrari engine. Oh my gosh, is this thing sweet? But it's, you know, it competes with the Lamborghinis, some of the BMWs, and of course the Mercedes-Benz like I had the week before. It was just an unbelievably nice car. It was just so pretty. You know, the Italians make such really nice designs. It's not real edgy or anything. It's got real smooth flowing lines. The interior is just the same way. It's just really just smooth and nice. It's kind of, like I said, it's a 4-seater. But the back seats are really not good for much. You'd have to scoot the front seats way up and other things. Like, you could put the dog back there, but, you know, it's a convertible, so it'd have to be a little dog. But it's just so neat. It's just for 2019, they haven't really changed much. They haven't changed this vehicle in years, and that's good because it's got a gorgeous front end and the tail section. It's a real wide vehicle, too. That's what's kind of funny. It's just so sexy. You know, it isn't the best deal on a convertible out there, that's for sure, but it doesn't have to be. This car is on everybody's bucket list. When you look at it, it's beautiful lines. It's really cool Maserati grill. It's got the trident. You know, it looks like the Aquaman movie or something. Right there in the grill, staring right at you. It is so sweet looking. I mean, that's one thing is, as I was pull up somewhere, everybody was just like, wow, he must have stolen that thing. No, it's such a beautiful vehicle. I had three or four ladies say, man, that is the prettiest car I've seen in a long, long time. Who's it made by? And I explained to them things like that. Even though I was in a Mercedes-Benz the week before and it was another $10,000 or $15,000 more, this one got three times as many looks. It's just so Italian, you know what I mean? And this thing, you just look at it, your pulse starts beating a little bit faster. And when you hear the V8 start up, it's got this really, had a sport button, which I'm sure, Matt, you would be keeping in sport mode everywhere, which changes shift points and changes some things. But the main thing, it opens up the exhaust, and it's got a little a valve in there to make it free flowing, kind of like the Corvette and some of the other companies have. And when you hear that V8, your heart's going to skip a beat, your palm's going to get sweaty, and you can't help it but smile. You know, you have a grin on your face, and there are people going, what is wrong with that guy? If you're driving a car like that, you're going to smile a lot. This is one of the cars that everybody notices, too. All kinds of looks. And sure, it has some of their latest gadgets like Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. But if you're looking for a really super high-tech vehicle, it ain't going to do it. And the audio system was very, very nice. But, guys, I hardly even turned on the stereo because the exhaust sounded so good. Especially if you're going under an underpass and you just rev it up and let it come down. It's just people all look at you like you're driving. It sounds like a Formula One car. This thing has like over 7,000 RPM red line. It's not one of those, you know, low revving V8s. This is a high revving Italian V8. And 454 horsepower. It's just great V8. It's just like I said, it sounds like American F1 car. You never get tired of the sound. And the suede leather interior, surprising quality. If everybody talks about Italians, maybe not the best quality. The fit and finish on this was very good. This car had 6,000 or 7,000 miles on it, and they're tough miles. Some of the track miles, that thing was beat up pretty good. No squeaks, no rattles, which I was actually surprised. Because people on the Italians, you know, you put up with the car maybe not being reliable, maybe this or that, squeak or rattle, because they're just so Italian. What can I say? It's just that, you know, granted, comfortable seats, very comfortable, not much room in the back seat. The paddle shifters are stationary. That's one thing that's cool. This is a vehicle you really use the paddle shifters on, and it has a rev matching. So when you go to downshift, it automatically matches the revs, which you hear the engine running up there. That sounds even sexier. But they're stationary. They don't turn with the wheel, and they really, really work better that way. It's got the 8.4-inch Uconnect system, which is from their deals with FCA, Fiat Chrysler, and that's really kind of cool. But it's simple. This is almost a retro kind of vehicle. It's got small buttons on a lot of the features of the car, including the top. You have to push the button for the top, and you push the button to roll the windows down and up and things like that. And the top, automatic top, it folds in the back. And this is the first car I've had in a long time that actually uses the key to start it up. Did not have remote, did not have push button start. When you talk about cargo space, there's not a lot of cargo space. If you're going to go somewhere for the weekend, pack light. How's that? Driving this sucker, it'll take turns like you want an Italian sports car to take them. It'll take the turns faster than you can take them. How's that? It's not as fast as a Challenger SRT or even a Mustang GT, but once again, it doesn't have to be. It's not as comfortable or as quiet or near as fast as the Mercedes AMG S63 that I had last week, but it doesn't have to be that either. It's not as high-tech as this competition, but it doesn't have to be either. I mean, Audis are really high-tech. Mercedes are super high-tech. This is not. Okay, and to me, that's kind of like some of the appeal of it. You buy this car because you've got the money to, and you've always wanted one. Disposable income, and you've always dreamed of owning a Ferrari, but maybe this is a step down from a Ferrari, but, you know, it's owned by the same company, and they have a lot of shared parts, and it's just like Italian stuff. It's beautiful. I was lucky enough to live out my fantasy this week, you know. For that, I want to thank Maserati because, guys, if you have a chance to go test drive one of these, before you go look at your Mercedes and some of the other BMWs and stuff like that, go look at the Maserati because it's smoking hot.
All right, that's going to do it for us on this week's edition of the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. For Mike Herzing, Aline Falkenberg-Hull, I'm Matt Peralta. We're back next time, same place, same time, right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network podcast.